Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome back to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. I'm Cliff, and the man in the crypt is...
The man in the crypt?
Yeah.
I'm not in a crypt.
You look like you are.
No.
This looks like you're actually in a coffin.
Well, I'm not. I've been watching what they do in the shadows as well, the TV series.
It's fantastic.
I love it.
Anyway, Matt Berry, just being Matt Berry again.
I was thinking, where on earth did he get that accent from? Where?
I don't know, but wherever he got from, it's amazing. His entire career is based on his voice and pronouncing words just a little bit wrong in a booming voice.
I was listening to a podcast a year ago, I think, a little bit longer maybe, and he was on with the guy from Queens of Stone Age. Okay. And he was talking, because I think Matt Berry, he brought out a couple of albums or something.
Yeah, I've got a couple of them. They're really good. Like, they're not jokey. They're excellent, really serious. He's got his own studio in his house. He plays like 20 instruments and stuff. He produces it, plays every instrument. He's got an album that I think he would like, all of TV's. Children's TV themes like Rainbow and stuff like that, like from the 70s.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
It's like kind of prog rock kind of stuff. And he's got one called Music for Insomniacs, which is just like these two long suites of music, like listen to it at night. It's good, really good. Anyway,
yeah, don't know how we got into that bit. Anyway, I'm Skunk Anansie this week.
Okay, I was gonna say, the whole band,
yeah,
not just Skin. Band.
No, singer. I'm not just Skin. No,
my old media studies lecturer in college said was the most beautiful woman in the world.
I think she's a dangerous looking woman myself.
He's wrong, isn't he? Like, he's wrong.
Yeah, I think he is.
No, but
she'd kill you, wouldn't she?
Which is an attractive in itself.
She'd definitely go for you, yeah. for a certain type, for a certain demographic. It is.
Count me in.
Count you in. What you been doing? Anything this week?
I almost died about an hour ago, so there's that.
Another electrocution.
No, the lift decided to drop 3 floors.
Did it?
Yeah.
That's shocking, that. I bet you got a right old fright.
We were just getting in the lift and Jane said, oh, apparently there's been hell on in these lifts today. Like, some of the women in the WhatsApp group for the tower were saying, the lifts, like, we dropped 3 floors. And I was like, whatever, they're always exaggerating, these women. And then it literally happened like 10 it seconds did. Later. Proper shit myself. yeah, you know, God knows
That's
how it
scary.
Happened, right? But yeah, and then it just went up to our floor and we got out.
That's awful. We worked at T-Mobile there. People used to get in the lift and just jump up and down to see if we could break it. But it was only a floor. So, like, you know, I don't think it would have been that bad. But the worst lift I've ever been in my life was in Woolworths in South Shields. Did you ever go on that lift?
Well, I worked in Woolworths in South Shields for a very short spell of time.
Did you?
Have I ever told you the story about this? Worked there.
I don't think so.
Worked there.
Has it got anything to do with the lift?
Well, I went in it a few times, but I know what you mean. It was a very old lift, wasn't it? Almost like somebody was like just pulling it.
Aye. Uh-huh. exactly what it was like.
I worked there for like a Christmas job, with the hope of being kept on, obviously. It was all right. Like, it wasn't the best part-time job I ever had. I left McDonald's to work there. Well, I didn't leave, I didn't like get headhunted or anything like that. I left McDonald's and ended up with a job there, paid slightly more money. It was a Christmas job, so one part of it was great that if I ever did the night shift, I had to like stack the toy shelves. So I used to go in the big warehouse where all the toys were and then stack the shelves with all the toys.
Yeah, was Teddy Ruxpin there?
Teddy Ruxpin were there just walking around, obviously, sinister. These little caterpillar men. stock up the pick and mix. I must have told you, man, because it was around the millennium, and it was when Gary Glitter got done for being a paedophile, and I put his Christmas song on a loop over and over.
That does ring a bell, actually.
Because I think we saw in the paper, in the Gazette, somebody sent a letter in complaining that they had been on in Woolworths, which was in WH Smith's, which was next door. So next time I went into work, I put it on a loop to see if anybody would complain.
Did they?
No, but disappointingly. Anyway, I didn't get kept on, like, not because of that. but I was really gutted. Like, there's no reason for us not to get kept on. They kept some people on, and you know me, I'm a conscientious worker. So I was gutted not to get kept on. And another lad who worked there already, ages after, I was like, hey, I still don't get why I got let go from that job, because it was all right, you know what I mean? There's one for me, Dad. You know what I mean? and he said, oh, yeah, like, basically there was two people called Paul and one of yous used to like nick off and just smoke in like the lifts, like in the back bit.
Yeah.
And they didn't know which one it was. So,
you were confused with the other Paul. Well, that's very kind, isn't it? That's anyway, nice of them.
So, my dad,
that's a disgrace.
Obviously, he'll be picking us up on saying, you know what I mean there? But also, he has a little confession for you. I pretended to go to work at Woolworths for the next month.
What did you do instead?
I just used to sit in the park, sit on a park bench in like black trousers and a white shirt.
Like a big tramp.
Well, no, very smart tramp.
I used to do a very similar thing when I worked for the police. I used to just phone in sick and think, oh, I'm not going in there. And I used to just go to the Metro Centre and stuff with that blue pass that you used to have that used to get you on the Metro and all the buses.
But I didn't even do that.
Just stare in the officer's club window.
I had no money. I remember sitting on the park bench at the library at the Nook for ages. Just like, maybe I should tell my mum and dad that I haven't been kept on. But no, it was about a month.
It's funny that, isn't it? It's funny.
Obviously, I wasn't like both did similar things. So I wasn't like going every day. But yeah, I was too scared or too ashamed to tell my mum and dad. But that was when I didn't realise it was a case of mistaken identity. Should have told them that.
I mean, look what these Woolies people have done here.
And what they've have they achieved there? They've gone under.
Well, unfortunately, they've gone under.
Back the
Do you
horse.
Call it Woolworth? Do you call it Woolworth or Woolworths? Because my lass calls it Woolworth.
You know, the people without who aren't, like Geordies are from Shields, going to be like, what the fuck are they talking about here?
No, but this is a big American store, man. That's what it was.
Yeah, no, but not Woolworth.
Not just in the North.
I don't think they call it Woolworth in fucking LA.
Well, I can't change my voice.
I know. That's
I can't
what I'm
change
saying,
my voice. Can
I think I would call it Woolies.
Woolworths.
Or Woolworths with the S. Gotta add the S.
I'd definitely call it Woolworths. Yeah.
I like. I don't say Mark. Where, do you say Marks and Spencers? I mean, you know, when you're looking through the window,
one them anyway,
thinking about going inside.
Oh, I don't look through the window. I was reading the Stephen King book, and then the Stephen King book again. Much like everything that I proved to people, like I did with you, it said Woolworths in there, so it's definitely Woolworths.
Okay, well,
that's what I think.
I agree with. I mean, we could look on the sign.
We could go on that, couldn't we?
But anyway.
Click on the sign. That's it. You know our Twitter mate, the Abroth Matam?
Yes.
He does the podcast, the football podcast there now.
I've seen it, yeah. I haven't listened to it yet, but I've seen it pop up. I've got a couple of... keep meaning to give it a listen.
Yeah. Good. So on the podcast, I listened to it. It was quite funny. And they were talking about football mascots. Okay. And it got me thinking. I don't know if this was... I think it was you. It must have been you. Can you remember when we had the Samsons, the cat? Mask, the whole thing in the house. And we had it on and stuff
very
like
much,
that.
Very much so, yes.
I thought you would. Because... My dad, for people listening, my dad used to work for football in the community for Sunderland. He was a coach and he used to go into schools and coach kids and things like that. And he used to get one of the trainees dressed up as Samson's the cats to sort of entertain the kids and stuff. He maintains that he never got in the Samson the cat costume, but I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
How could you resist?
I know. Well, that's the thing. So one of these times, the Samson the cat costume was at my house. So so what I did was I put it on because I think you were coming over, weren't you? Yeah. So I put it on to surprise you, open the door, you know, as Samson the cat.
Yeah.
So I heard the door go, put it on and everything. I mean, it was heavy. Thing. It was
I remember. Weird. It was fucking stunk in the head as well.
It did stink. It stunk of sweat, didn't it?
Yeah, it was horrible.
it was absolutely awful. So they knock on the door and I go down the stairs and open the door and it's the postman. He gets the fright of his life. Well, obviously, I thought it was you. I mean, he was fucking terrified. This big cat answering the door. But I remember we had that in the house.
I think this
old video, isn't it? I didn't have it for a long time. It's expensive. My dad was sworn to keep it safe. It was a... it was a rather expensive bit of kit.
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. If you see a crocodile, don't forget to scream. Took a turn for the worse that trip, didn't it?
It did.
Life is a dream. The first verse. I mean, getting eaten by a crocodile.
Hang on, right? You're rowing the boat merrily down the stream, right? But the person narrating the song is saying, if you see your crocodile, don't forget to scream.
Yeah.
Why does he need to remind you of that?
Yep. Just
I mean, if you see a crocodile as you row the boat, the first thing that I'm going to do is scream.
You might There's no way
I want to be turned around in the water constantly by a crocodile.
You might have empirical evidence that you freeze.
Could do. That could happen, couldn't it? Could
you might think happen. You're going to scream when you see that crocodile, but I've witnessed from the banks, banks of the river, banks of the stream, many times.
People just freeze.
People just freeze. So before you set off, can I just remind you, don't forget to scream when you see it. It won't, honestly, it won't have any effect. don't fall either way.
Don't freeze. They love it when you freeze them crocodiles. Don't do that. Isn't it ironic that that crocodile hunter man got in all them crocodiles' mouths and that and wrestled with them, and then a little stingray got him?
I know. I mean,
it's awful.
He shouldn't be messing with stingrays, should he?
He shouldn't be messing with any of them, really, should he?
No, he shouldn't.
To be honest.
But it's in his name, isn't it?
Yeah. Shouldn't be funny in a run with any of them. He got cocky, and then he saw a stingray. He thought, I'm fine. I'll wrestle with the crocodiles, man. This stingray, it'll not do me any harm. Barb's in the heart.
Barb.
This week, because I've been watching stuff with War Lass, and I've watched Raised by Wolves. Have you seen that? Or have you heard of that? The Ridley Scott thing?
That's I've heard good. Of it, but what is it? It's not the Caitlin Moran thing, is it? I'm sure she.
No, it's sci-fi thing with the guy who was in Vikings, Travis Fimmel, I think he's called.
Okay, and, my dad loves Vikings. Really so I haven't seen it.
I liked it, but then when he died, I stopped watching it. So, but anyway, check that out if you can, because that's really good. But the other thing that I've become obsessed with, Cliff, is Ghanaian movie posters. Have you heard of these?
Yeah. Is it where they like change any change the words?
Well, I think what it is, right? Obviously, these films come out in sort of Ghana and stuff like that, and the people painting the posters, they don't get the real posters. So what they've got to do is just guess what the film's about. And they've got to guess what darkness and things like that look like.
Yeah.
So I've sent you the first one.
Where have you sent it?
What do you make of the first one? Have a your phone. Not your brain directly. I mean, it's not Johnny. So the one that, and I'll put them on the Twitter as well. I've sent you one of your favorites, Mission Impossible. What do you make of Tom Cruise?
I don't
Cruise,
like the eh? First three Mission Impossible films. Can I just tell you that right now?
You're right. Okay.
I think this is an incredible poster. I particularly like, I presume that's also him on the bike rather than the main picture.
Well, it doesn't look like him, does it?
Doesn't look like the same. Well,
doesn't look, no, it doesn't look like the same
got
boy.
Tom Cruise, although it looks more like a poster for Lethal Weapon. Like, if it said Lethal Weapon, I'd be like, yeah, all right.
I know. Uh-huh.
But it's got a big
sometimes they do that. Sometimes they mix two films in one.
But the guy
that's what they sometimes do.
What the hell? I mean, this is terrible subject matter for a podcast, isn't it? You sending me a picture and me going, yeah, that's funny. But
yeah, but I want you to describe it, so...
Okay, so
in any way,
Mission
I'll
Impossible.
Send you another one.
So the next one we've got, The Spy Who Loved Me, not loved. The Spy Who Loved Me. And we've got, what does it say at the bottom? Lovers Cheshire Club. So we've got a man who I guess is meant to be James Bond. This looks like a Vic Reeves drawn, by the way.
does.
A man who's meant to be James Bond.
There's a leaping salmon.
With a leaping salmon, yeah.
What's the leaping salmon there for? The Spy Who Loved Me. And the last
and a
one
woman who I
is
presume
one...
is she looks aghast behind James Bond's back.
She looks rather aghast, doesn't she?
Uh-huh.
She doesn't look
what's
well
next?
At all, actually.
Mrs. Doubtfire, they've got that all wrong. All wrong.
They have got Mrs. Doubtfire wrong. This is another one where I think they've, you know, obviously they haven't realised it's a comedy.
She's put... Mrs. Doubtfire, actually, the picture she's of Mrs. Doubtfire and Robin
face.
Williams and Mrs. Doubtfire is pretty good, actually. But she's got a broomstick through the eye of what looks like Rob Lowe, who's not in the film.
Yeah.
And then there's just, for some reason, an outside...
Who's got a foot?
Shoulders and head of Robin Williams coming out of the floor, grabbing Mrs. Doubtfire's foot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Fantastic,
good.
Isn't it?
We need more of them.
Good artwork. Yeah, I think we do. I think I'll put them. Obviously, I'm well aware of the fact that people not know what we're talking about, so I'll put them on my Twitter so they know what we're on about. But yes, that's what I've been doing this week, Cliff.
That's
so what we're going to talk about.
We're talking this week about why are we talking about it? We're talking about Hard Day's Night. The Beatles film from 1964.
Yeah. We're talking about, I think, because John Lennon, I think that's what got we're talking about it. It was his 80th birthday last week and stuff.
Yeah. It was on the telly because it was it would have been John Lennon's 80th birthday on the 9th of October.
And John Lennon is the man, as far as I'm concerned.
No.
Have you ever seen his naked, Cliff? No.
No, I mean, it's surprising, but no, I don't think.
Ooh, a large intake of breath.
I was picturing it.
I don't think I've seen you naked, actually.
Yeah.
But if you had seen us naked, you would be well aware of the fact that I have a John Lennon tattoo, and my son is also called Lennon, so
yeah,
I'm a massive John Lennon.
Is it John Lennon tattoos on
as
your
you are as well, aren't you? Yeah, on my arm, but, you know, if I was naked, you'd probably still see it.
You wouldn't, my eyes wouldn't be looking at your arm. So it's a film that I've seen, I don't know, around 10 times probably, and there's not very many films I've watched over and over like that.
Yeah.
Having the music in, I mean, it's my favorite band, and having the music in helps with that, obviously. But I think it's one of those great films that, you know, if you have people over and you want to be a bit cool and you've got something, mm-hmm. you put something arty on the telly while there's some music on or whatever, it's one of those I think I've probably like always kind of had on the background occasions and stuff like that as well. And if it's ever on the telly, like the other night, if I'm flicking, I'll land on it and keep it on, like, which is exactly what happened the other day when it was being repeated. I love it, but we'll get into why I love it and why I think it's great. After what about you?
Yeah, I think I was probably a teenager when I first saw it, and I loved it. I just thought it was absolutely fantastic, and I still do. I mean, the thing that I really like about it is it's just the Beatles just being themselves, really, isn't it? Sort of improv and stuff like that, where they're just themselves. And their personalities and stuff like that just come through, and they're like witty and they're funny and they're full of life and stuff like that. I love it for that reason, I think. Obviously, the songs and stuff are amazing as well, absolutely class.
Yeah.
And when you find out, like, you know, the title of the film is like, you know, some of that Ringo Starr's just made up, and then they've had a competition to see who could write, you know, the best song with that as the title. And they've done Ringo's it within still, like a day still or something. Trying. I mean, that's
just realize genius, the film's been up.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's Ringo's little title, isn't it? So you can take some credit for that, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. You take a lot of credit for the stuff in this film. I mean, we love Ringo, don't we?
I think Ringo's the best person in this film.
Do you? You mean the best actor or person?
I think his character is the best character in the film, and not for that by the river scene that everybody says, oh, and that's what made people think he was an actor, but he was just hungover. Not for that. I think apart from the first thing he says, which is awful, when they're in the train carriage, and then he does that weird laugh. So he hasn't even finished saying the words, and he goes, it's so bad. Everything after that, I think he's the most likable Beatle in it. Okay, I'll say it a different way. I think he's the most likable Beatle in it, and I can see why Ringo ended up with a big following in America while the Beatles was going on, because he's the most lovable Beatle in this. I think George is actually the best.
You think?
Yeah, I think George is the best. I think George is the coolest. But I always think George is the coolest. So.
Do you? Well, I'll go for John Lennon, I think.
I know.
I think he's the coolest. I think he's the wittiest. I think he's the craziest, the most off the wall.
You
can say, like, you know, that he loves, like, stuff like the Goons and stuff like that. And
yeah, you can see Peter Sellers and Spike Milligan from and stuff in this, for sure. I agree,
it's so funny, this film.
One of the things I think about this is, obviously, when it came out in 1964, the Beatles had like just been on the Ed Sullivan Show when they started filming this, so they just cracked America, and Beatlemania was at its height in England and just starting in America, and this film apparently was going to be called Beatlemania before it was called Holiday's Night. And that's what it's about, really. It's basically the Beatles playing themselves, getting chased by fans, getting into a few scrapes on their way to filming a TV special where they play a little set in front of adoring fans. And that's not revolutionary when you think about it now, but that's because all kind of banned films and stuff, banned, not outlawed. I mean, music films follow that trajectory. Look at Bohemian Rhapsody recently. If you look at all of these, like, music films, it all follows the same template.
Yeah.
And that template was set out by this film. Like, this was the first one that did that. There had been other music films before. We've talked about The Girl Can't Help It, which I still think we should cover on this. Cliff Richard had been in a couple of films by this point. Espresso Bongo were the kind of first one.
So he's Aldi in that.
Great. Espresso Bongo is well worth watching because it's kind of similar to this in look and feel, but a bit more sinister. But this was kind of encapsulated it, but also it's the first time a band. Beatles are the first band that are like this for a start, that have these personalities that are willing to, or they're not being exploited, but their personalities are part of the music and part of everything about them. They're the first time a band like this existed. They're the first time a band like this ended up getting a film of their own where it basically shone a light on these personalities because it was as much of the appeal as the music was.
Yeah.
It's hard to kind of think about it now because it's so ingrained in the culture the Beatles are and what their personalities are that you can't kind of separate that a bit. And also now you know everything about people in bands and stuff like that. But at the time you didn't.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were a band being interviewed and they were funny and answering questions like in irreverent ways and kind of snapping back at the interviewers and stuff like that was unheard of, absolutely unheard of. But in this film, they take the piss out of that and play it for laughs. And I think it's a groundbreaking film for me for more ways than one, but that's one of them.
Well, it is for me as well. I mean, the other thing that's it's difficult to gauge, I guess, you know, looking back, is this was like the birth of youth culture and stuff like that. And there's a part at the start of the film where they're on a train and they're sitting in a carriage and this old sort of older guy gets on with his suit and his bowler hat and stuff like that, you know. And they start putting the radio on. He's telling them to switch the radio off and stuff like that. And, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that. And John Lennon, obviously being that character, has a right go at him, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? No, because this is your train, isn't it? So, that, I mean, there's elements of that in it. Obviously, the youth culture coming up and things like that as well. The other thing that I got from it as well is, like, a part of it where the Beatles are, I mean, I think that this was true of the Beatles, obviously, at that time. I mean, they had just started to become famous and things. And there was, like, this thing where they were a little bit unsure about the fame type thing. They were always trying to get away or, you know, not sign autographs throughout the film and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? So there's that part as well. So that's the other interesting thing that I got from it, you know, that these guys have suddenly become, like, the biggest band in the world, they're famous everywhere. That's what they wanted. But then when they got there, it's a bit shocking, you know? It's a bit hard to take type thing.
Yeah, again, like, absolutely unprecedented. So, I mean, the first shot of the film is them being chased down the street by fans while they're on their way to the train to get the train to London to be in this TV show. And they were real fans following them. So it was actually it was a real scenario. They are fans chasing their idols down the street. And it's a great opening scene. It's such a good opening scene to a film. It sets it up perfectly.
It's a great opening chord and a great opening scene, isn't it?
I mean, amazing. I mean, just perfect.
I think it's probably the most famous chord, opening chord in music,
I would have thought so, but also, like, just adding to what you said about the youth culture, I don't know whether I kind of agree with that, but for me it's more about class difference.
That's in it as well, for
it's
sure,
about
yeah.
them being working class, breaking, I mean, if you look at what they did, in terms of popular culture, the Beatles broke class barriers. They broke the difference between working class and upper class. I don't think they always got it right, and I think they would say they didn't always get it right, but these are four, and this film shows it, these are four lower working
class... 23-year-old lads?
Three lower working class guys. John Lennon, who's kind of in a middle-class upbringing, but actually the life he lived was, well, non-working class because he didn't have a job. And... They're on the train with that guy with the bowler hat. Like, that's real. Like, they were in that scenario and there was people sneering at them, but they had broken those barriers. They were thrust into, like, all of these, like, affairs and gala dinners and stuff where people wanted to, like, prod and poke at them and cut the hair and stuff like that. And, like, there were these little specimens and stuff. And that's one thing that the Beatles did. For me, as much as youth culture, it was more about the class, breaking class barriers or showing that working class people could achieve something. And as much as they were kind of thought of as the kind of goody two-shoes band in comparison to the Rolling Stones, for example. Like, they weren't. These are, like, real working-class guys, like me or you, like the kind of families we're from, and worse, and so, certainly in Ringo's case and George's case, were very kind of rough upbringing.
I get that completely. I mean, you look back at that time and everybody, you know, Peter Sellers, for example, was from Yorkshire, wasn't he? But he consciously changed his accent into this very posh sort of accent so he could, you know, he could be in films, he could be on the TV, he could be on the radio and stuff like that. Whereas the Beatles didn't do that. They were always Liverpool, weren't they? They were always from Liverpool. They never changed their accents or anything like that. Yeah. I was reading that the American distributors for the films wanted to dub the Beatles' voices.
Yeah.
So this isn't just a class sort of thing, you know, within the United Kingdom. It's also in the US as well.
Yeah. And let's be honest, like, they had been a band for about 6 years or something at this point, but it's only 2 years since they released their first single. And that's something else that I think is crazy. And you mentioned it before about the John Lennon wrote A Hard Day's Night in 10 minutes from, like, let's have a little competition to see who can write the theme tune to this film. And he did it in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
The speed of working and writing that the Beatles were operating at in the 60s is absolutely insane, certainly in the first part of the 60s. Like, it's about 4 months from...
I think at the heart of that, though, isn't it? At the heart of that, though, is, like, you know, the relationship between Lennon and McCartney, that they're almost, like, fighting to be better than each other, aren't they?
Yeah, and spurring each other on, kind of, and they can't stop, right? They can't stop because they're trying to best each other all the time.
Well, they didn't stop, did they? I mean... Yeah, even when the Beatles broke up, they were still doing it. Even though they weren't speaking to each other and stuff like that, they still had this kind of rivalry, you know, where they wanted to be better or better the next person's song and stuff like that. And that can only kind of drive you on to greatness, really. We've talked about the Beatles anthology before, and obviously they idolized Elvis and stuff like that. And there's a bit more in the anthology where Paul McCartney says, we saw Elvis come up on the screen, and, you know, and there's Jane Mansfield and stuff like that. Yeah. And I thought, that's a good job. So I think they always wanted to be in films and stuff like that. And I think Brian Epstein didn't exactly sign, you know, a lucrative deal or anything like that for them to be in this film, because the soundtrack was actually sort of partly owned, I think, by United Artists who made the film and stuff.
Yeah.
And he signed like a three-film deal with them and things like that. So, yeah, I don't think it was... I just think it was the fact that they wanted to be on... I mean, and who wouldn't? Who wouldn't want to be on a film?
Yeah, of course.
In a film that idols Elvis. I mean, of course you'd want to do that. And I think the style of the film and the way like it shot and stuff like that, I mean, certain parts of it, I don't know how they did it with the massive cameras that they must have had in the 60s, but parts of it's very handheld and, you know, when they're chasing them around.
That's another
parts.
Thing I wanted to talk about. The style of the film, incredibly influential.
Yeah.
Also, it's taken cues. I mean, it's mad. This is a pop band film. This is essentially like having a One Direction film or something like that. Like, that's what it is. But it's being approached as if it's high art. So you've got the director taking cues from like 60s kitchen sink films like Saturday Night and Sunday Morning and stuff like that. I know they've said that shooting in black and white was more because it cost more money to shoot in color than black and white. But I still think it's still a decision. They could have decided to spend that money on that and cut it on and lose it on something else. Mm-hmm. You're shooting in black and white, so it looks like Saturday Night, Sunday Morning and these kind of 60s kitchen sink films, which is all about northern working class men breaking free and stuff like that. And I think that's deliberate, whether they say it or not. But also the style of cutting, the quick cuts and the rapid camera movement, that's kind of influenced by late 50s French New Wave films. Like, it's incredibly, like, it's like getting David Lynch to film a video for Westlife. It's crazy. It's a great mix, because actually the Beatles are much more than just pop music. They are high art, in my opinion. It's ultimately worked.
Yeah.
And also that style has influenced so many things, like especially like I was saying that last scene in the TV studio, the camera's whizzing around the crowd while all the kids, the masses are screaming because the Beatles are playing. I never noticed it before, but when I watched it this week, I actually felt quite dizzy. Like the camera's moving around, I felt quite delirious watching that.
Yeah, it's
that
moving last around concert. So
much. It's a sequence, and it's obviously on purpose, and it kind of made us feel like that must be what it's like to be in the middle of all of those screams and all of that.
Like you're there. I mean, that was obviously the idea, I guess, wasn't it? I mean, it, you're right in what you're saying. I think when I was watching it, I was thinking to myself, you know, it's a mix. It is very arty, like you say. It's also, you know, a little bit like a documentary at times with the camera movement and stuff like that. But then it's also surreal, you know, and it's also, you know, a comedy. So it's like a big mix of different things, isn't it? Yeah, it is. It's really, really good. I mean, it's really, really clever. And like you say, the things that it's gone on to influence and stuff like that. I think someone called Dick Lester, who directed the film, like the father of MTV, because this is like the first sort of music video. Do you know what I mean? I mean, obviously it's a feature film, but you know, lots of music videos are shot in the same way in the 80s and stuff like that. So sure, it's definitely influenced a lot.
Apparently, he said he wanted.
But just from a personal point of view, I just sat and but from a personal point of view, I just sat and I really enjoyed it because it's funny, it's entertaining.
I mean, on a very base level.
Who cares about the plot? Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's just following the Beatles around for 36 hours, and that is my cup of tea. That's what I want to watch. Favorite bits?
Yeah.
I like the bit where they're being interviewed, which is what you've said. And the bit where a reporter asked John Lennon if he has any hobbies, and I found out what he wrote on the bit of paper. Do you know what he wrote on the bit of paper?
Apparently he wrote tits.
I
think he draws a picture of tits, not writes it.
I think he does.
If you watch it, I think it looks like he's drawn a pair of boobs.
Another John Lennon bit where he's in the bath. I like that bit as well.
Yeah, that bit's great. Very surreal again. He disappears from the bath and all of that stuff. And I read something today saying that he says help and he plunges a submarine into the water. So
that's right. So
the next two films are all there. I think that's...
people can leap the stuff like that, can't they? But I mean, I like all of that. I mean, obviously the famous bit for Ringo when he's acting sort of chops is that lonely sort of bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, same as you, he's like hungover and stuff, isn't he?
Yeah.
And that's the reason why he's like that. But I mean, there's loads of great. Probably the best. I haven't got a particular scene that I like. I just like the quips where they're talking to each other, and that sort of quick witted. That's what I like about it.
Yeah,
I like the quick wit of all of the Beatles.
There's two bits that I love. One is the when they throw the grandfather into the like the cargo bit of the train, and they end up singing "I Should Have Known Better" while they're playing cards. I just, I absolutely love that. It's one of those kind of surreal bits. And there's another bit on the train where all of a sudden they're running along by the side of the train. Going, can I have my ball back, mister? That bit. There's just like surreal. This is what I mean about the French
surreal moments
kind of stuff where it doesn't make any sense. And like, you know, like teenage pop fans watching this film used to like really linear films are all of a sudden like, well, hang on, they're outside, they were in the train a second ago, now they're running along outside of it. It doesn't make any sense. It would have been jarring for people at the time to watch it and think, what? But this is, again, they throw Paul's grandfather into the cargo hold, they decide to go in and have a game of cards, and then all of a sudden they're playing a song and there's like these schoolgirl fans, and I love that song anyway. There's one bit where McCartney mouths the wrong words for this.
Is it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's another bit where he does it as well. Like he generally the wrong words.
I've noticed that he does that when he's laughing. When he's laughing, he always seems to mix things up. But they all do, I think, don't they?
But I just love that bit, like the four of them just sitting, playing a great song, and they're all sitting around, like facing each other, singing and playing. It just the atmosphere looks great. It just looks brilliant. Looks like they're having a great time singing and playing and acting or whatever. And the other bit I love is McCartney. And it's they're on the set and he plays And I Love Her, which is one of my favourite Beatles songs. It's also, you may remember the song that we started our wedding with when Jane walked down the aisle is that song. So a very special place in my heart as well. And I love it. I just it's just a beautiful song and I love the I probably love it more because of this film than
in my wedding, Cliff. On my wedding, we played Why Don't We Do It in the Road when she came
out. Yeah.
No, we didn't. We didn't do that.
No, it was fucking in the bushes.
Would have been good though, wouldn't it? I think Why Don't We Do It in the Road's the best one.
Yeah, well, I love that.
Why don't we do it in the road?
I love it. Yeah, it's big class. Fun.
But the Beatles are class. They're amazing. And the thing is, I don't know about you, but I don't listen to the Beatles enough. That's what I think.
Well, I do.
What do you think about
now.
That? Because I go through kind of stages in my life of where I'll just have them on constantly.
I'll
stop for a bit. And then I'll do it again.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. And I do at the moment because, like, the baby. I don't think she's a toddler now, even though she can't walk. She loves them when I put the records on. So I've got almost all the albums on vinyl again now. I did have them on CD, obviously, like, when we talked about collecting them when we were teenagers and first had jobs and stuff. I'm trying to get them all on vinyl now, either old ones or on represses or whatever, like some of the remasters and stuff. And so they're kind of there to put on a little bit more, like rather than if they're just buried in a big pile of CDs. And baby absolutely loves them, and she loves Ringo, which I'm over the moon with. So as soon as you should see her face when the record player goes on. And I lift the thing up and click the thing and the arm starts going down. She's like, looks like so excited. But the Beatles get the best response out of all the bands. So I end up putting them on a bit more than I probably used to, more than a year ago, because she loves them. And Hard Day's Night, it's one of my favorite Beatles albums. Yeah. Every song's pretty much a banger.
It's funny that you should say that because, I mean, that's cast my mind back when Lennon, you know, was Pearl's age and stuff. And I would have them on constantly then. And he would love them as well. I mean, whether it's like sitting in the car or whatever. And, you know, you had them on when you could actually put CDs in cars and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was the same. It was almost that I thought to myself, well, it's my responsibility, you know, no matter how old he is, to actually, you know, get him to listen to these songs.
Yeah, well,
and that's like a joy, another joy of being like a parent, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? That you can let your children sort of listen to this stuff.
Well, and of course,
enjoyment that
again.
You get out of it. Yeah, and the enjoyment that you get out of watching the reaction of your kid, you know, listening to these songs, like you've just said there. It's almost like you're listening to it for the first time, isn't it?
You are, because you're thinking about how they listen to it and you know it's good. So it's not like they're going to be like, oh, and she like literally like jumps up and down and like shake, like, you know, she's quite in time, like shaking her hands and bouncing up and down when it comes on. It's great to watch. Like it's brilliant. So at the moment I listen to them a lot, and Hard Day's Night is one I've had on quite a lot over the last few months. So I know what you mean. Like you go in and out of listening to them, and certainly for me, I listen to some albums more than others.
Yeah, you go in and out, but they're always there, and you're always in your back of your mind. You're thinking, I should crack me Beatles albums on. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I've said, do you know what I mean? Haven't I? Your dad's gonna tell us that.
I know why, Dad, you're making us feel self-conscious about what we say. So back off, leave us be.
But your dad, he's very clean though, your dad, isn't he?
He's very clean, man.
He's a very clean man.
He is. Fastidious. So, yeah, I think, you know, the film, it's like, first and foremost, it's an enjoyable, fun film. It's got an amazing soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's got great performers in it. Are they great actors? Probably not, but it's great performances from them.
Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? And it's groundbreaking. It's dizzying, like how exciting it is, which is perfect for what it's meant to, you know, what it's all about. I just think it's perfect. It stands the test of time. Like, people could be watching it in 50 years' time and still be enjoying it, I think. And, like, I think that with the Beatles' music as well.
I do have a quiz. That's what I have. The quiz is about actors. No, it isn't. It's about musicians turned actors, Mr. Paul Clifford.
Okay.
Which drumming musician made a cameo in Steven Spielberg's Hook as Inspector Goode?
Well, I know for a fact that this is Phil Collins because I love Phil Collins and I love Hook.
Hook is awful.
Yeah, but terrible.
There you go. And he's also in this film. He's also
yeah,
on
but
a Hard
is
Day's
he
Night.
In it? Is he not like on the cutting room floor?
Yeah, he's on the cutting room floor. He's not actually in there. I think he was. You always see in the film. You always see like the upper tiers of the crowd. You never see anybody below the Beatles, do you?
Yeah, yeah. And he was one.
And
of
I
them.
Think he was. Yeah, I think he was one of them. So yeah, that's what that was. Who has a small part? You're going to get this right. Who has a small part in Mars Attacks, singing one of his hits in a half-empty Las Vegas club?
You can give it more and more.
Think about a dance now. Yeah. Did you say the name or do you think people will get it from that?
It's Tom Jones. Yeah.
Right. Who stars as the mayor of Bridge City opposite Kevin Costner in The Postman?
Iggy Pop.
It's our good friend Tom Petty.
Ah.
Which 90s songstress got rave reviews as a Czechoslovakian immigrant in the year 2000's Dancer in the Dark?
Björk.
Which 70s punk starred in Sly Stallone's Disastrous Judge Dredd in 1995?
Oh, 70s.
He's not technically a punk. He's not technically a punk. Like a new wave punk.
No, I'm gonna. I remember watching it. I can't remember. I'm gonna say Iggy Pop again because I can't remember.
You're gonna just say Iggy Pop for all the answers.
Yeah.
Ian Dury.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah. That's the end.
Okay. I think I got 3 out of 5.
Did you? I never keep count, to be honest.
I didn't keep count, no, but I'm gonna say that. Well, no, that's the end. And thanks for the quiz. I liked that one. It was quite easy, but also fun.
Easy, but fun.
So now we come to the end of the podcast and we say thank you for listening, everyone. Please follow us on the social medias. We're on Twitter at FCircusPod. You can find us on Facebook. It's just the name of the podcast. Like our podcast on Apple and shit like that. Give us a review. Subscribe to it. You know, keep listening. And before we go...
Yeah.
Just keep doing it. Yeah. Just like to thank you once more.
Just keep doing it.
And we're going to end this week with some music from a band called Independent Music Club, who are from the Portsmouth and Southampton area. And this is a song called Stargazing. It's pretty epic. What do you think, Brett?
Yeah, I really like it, yes. Yeah. I got Pink Floyd vibes.
Yeah.
But you didn't.
Floyd, yeah, it's a bit Verve, I thought, as well, and structure and stuff like that. But anyway, you can make your own mind up. Here is Stargazing by the Independent Music Club, and we will see you next week. Bye, everyone. Bye, bye. We'll be right back.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.